Hare Krishna, this is Gunadhar Swami. Greetings from Moscow. Reading from Jiva Dharma, Chapter 8, Nitya Dharma and Vaishnav Behavior. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Taksur Mulatam Yena Asmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Shayam Rupa Kadamaya Sadati Sapadantikam Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Shindu Bhebhacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasude Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So greetings from Moscow. Yeah, it's, I do, whatever bad qualities I have, one good quality I have is I try to be steady, and I'm quite determined to give this class. Last night here, we had a wonderful, wonderful program in the middle of Moscow. I'm staying at Shanti Shakti, which is my student Anand's place. It's also, first floor is a spa, satsang hall, treatment rooms, yoga studio. Then there's a family apartment. It's kind of like the spa in Hudson, if you've ever visited there. Then the top floor is rooms for people to stay, staff and things, people that come from India. But it's about 30 minutes from the center of Moscow. And traffic, there's a saying that they told me here. In London, they ask about the weather. In Moscow, they ask about the traffic. But we had an incredible program yesterday. They have a kirtan satsang, and right in the middle of Moscow. I mean, it's like three blocks from the Kremlin. It's really, really just an amazing, place. The person's father, his great-grandfather, was the most famous opera singer in the history of Russia, and everyone knows him, and became a devotee and married, I guess, it's an ex-type of student of mine that I know for many years, and they just host these programs, and he has a huge seven-room apartment right in the most exclusive section of Moscow. Really, really old. And they have kirtans, and it's just incredible. People come, and incredible kirtans. And really, really incredible, incredible kirtans. So it goes on from about 6 to 10, and in between each shift of the kirtan, then I would speak a little bit. And my general theme was that I was speaking about kirtan yoga, and kirtan is the most powerful form of meditation. And the power of a process of meditation is the degree in which it facilitates focus on the object of meditation. And I discussed about 5, 6, 7 different ways why kirtan, according to the bhakti tradition, is an efficacious process of meditation. And the first is the most powerful focus one has is in relationship. And in kirtan yoga, where the object of your meditation is God, the names of God, which are not different than God, then there's a natural relationship. And relationship is the symptom of love. And the most powerful force in focus in meditation, as we all know, is love, the highest form of Godhead. So in kirtan meditation, you're focused on the object of your love, which is not it. Because I always quote from Bhaktivinoda Thakur that every object or vastu has a shakti, and objects and acts of devotion have a bhakti shakti. A shakti means a power to influence you. So when you're focused, and therefore an increase in focus. And that's the way it is when you chant and meditate on the names of God. And in kirtan yoga, yoga means restraining the mind through focus on a particular object of meditation of your choice. Then the object of meditation is also not just a prop, therefore can reciprocate with you, and that reciprocation by God is love. Then I also discussed the and call melody and rhythm have a intrinsic connection with the sight to invoke love. So when you put the object of meditation, which is the names of God, in the context of rag and melody and rhythm, it increases the focus and the relationship. And what to speak of the object of sound is so sound enters into your body, into your mind, into your consciousness. My call dropped. Can someone say hello? Well, you may be able to hear me. Can someone send me an email letting me know that you can hear me?
Jai Maharaj, I can hear you. Sreti Krishna.
Okay. Yeah, we dropped there for a second. Okay. So it's very powerful. I just thought, you know, you're traveling. Traveling is the shape. It's movement increases passion. Passion increases distraction. And the frustration of being, and then to come into a meditation would be impossible to control the mind. In fact, it's described even in the perfected meditation, you never begin at full concentration. It's like revving up a car. And even in really perfected meditation, you don't start at samadhi. It's dharana, dhyan, samadhi. It's always dharana, dhyan, samadhi. It's always, you know, a remembrance and an increased remembrance and then a concentration. So it's very hard to just jump into meditation from, you know, travel. But I saw as soon as I got in that room, there's no way where my mind can go. The tal, the rhythm. I mean, it was overwhelming. The melodies, the incredible kirtan, the people chanting. So even if your mind is so distracted, where does it go in kirtan? There's nowhere to go but the object of meditation. And so in between each set, I would describe more and more. Our call broke, so I'm forgetting some of the other things. The principle of community increasing love. So when you're doing something together, it also invokes the love and increases the relationship. I talked about bhava, love of Godhead, what kirtan is. Kirtan is when the bhava part is expressed through music. And it's really wonderful. And when you get back to a heartfelt movie. So I love giving this class, and I never will miss it unless I absolutely have to, and therefore sometimes I don't give it. People think something happened to me. It's possible. I also, sometimes in travel, you forget. But if I'm not as prepared as I usually am, you'll have to forgive me. But I'll begin to describe the section on Jiva Dharma that we're at. And it's really, I think it's just getting more and more interesting. So we know that there's these great Babajis. Babaji literally means respected person, and it's sometimes given to people who are, I mean, the name is sometimes misused because people assume designations artificially. So a lot of people are Babaji. They want to be respected, but real Babaji is a very high stage of Krishna consciousness where one actually becomes qualified to stay in one place without distraction, completely dependent on God, completely fearless, and chanting the holy name of Krishna all day. Even I saw one letter from Prabhupada said the perfection of the Hare Krishna movement is someone to sit down in Mayapur and chant Hare Krishna all day. And Prabhupada actually one time gave Babaji. There's different orders of renunciation. Generally, we give Parivrajakacharya. It means there's four orders of sannyas, or renunciation. At the end of life, when one can just qualify to just concentrate and go on and give up all social responsibilities because death is going to take them anyway, and old age is going to debilitate your ability to enjoy them anyway. And there's a way to die when you're living. And give up all social obligation, and it's generally not recommended in this age. People are not qualified, but there is. It is, and so beyond the Parivrajakacharya, the traveling is the Paramahamsa stage, the topmost stage of renunciation, and in that stage, one can take Babaji, and he can sit down in one place and just chant. So it's a story of these Babajis. And they're living in Godhrindweep, the place where Lord Chaitanya is born, is called Navadweep. There are nine islands, and each of the islands exemplify and inspire a different item of devotional service. And Godhrindweep is the island of kirtan, which I'm very proud to say that at the end of November, I'm taking a group of 20 Iranians, Vaishnavas, on pilgrimage there. And it's so wonderful to kirtan with people who relish it because they can do it publicly in the country that they live in, either to even to worship God in the way they do is a risk to their lives. And the sense of freedom in their kirtan, because kirtan has to be done without inhibition, without attachment. And the way they just are you know, being oppressed and appreciating it so much, the way they just relish opening their hearts in kirtan and chanting. So these bodies, other people nearby who are also very advanced. At one tree where Lord Nityananda sat, a very sacred place, and the Vaishnavas are together and they're discussing spiritual topics. That is called satsang, to join with truth, to join with people of truth. And there's a great, great relish in it because it's an activity of devotion that's very much pleasing to God. To glorify God is pleasing to God. To do it with others is even more pleasing. And there's a special potency of reciprocation in the heart. Srindata Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Vigyantasto Yabhadvani Vidinoti Sarit Satam, Surit Satam, God is Surit Satam to the devotee. Surit, he's close at heart, he reciprocates. And how does he reciprocate? Trindata Sakata Krishna Punya Shrava Hijanta Stoyiba. He cleans the heart. It's a very purifying process. So one young man somehow comes into the assembly and he asks the question, which is the theme of this chapter, is how does someone who's engaged in nitya dharma duties, we have duties, but our eternal duty is based on our eternal self. Like we may have a particular karma, nature, gender, caste, you know, age. We have so many duties, and they are duties, and they're duties to purify us, to realize the self, but they're naimittika dharma, they're temporary duties, because they're based on a temporary situation. Yeah, I'm a woman in this life, I'm a wife in this life, I'm a husband in this life, even in this life it changes. We can see that. And I'm a son, now I'm a father, and in terms of different relationships, we have different duties. But there's a nitya dharma. There's a duty based on our eternal self, which is the highest duty, and all other duties can be transcended for that duty. That's one of the concepts of Gita. Sarva dharma prityaja mame kam charanam vijaham tvam. Krishna said, I'm going to give up all duties and just surrender unto me. Just be yourself, be the soul. Give your life to me and don't worry. That action itself is the most pure action. It saves one from any type of other fear. And that's what the faith is of a devotee. So what is the behavior of one who acts as a devotee? Right? I mean, maybe some of you listening to these sanghas regularly perhaps remember what the Prabhupada said, the perfection state of the living entity is called a devotee. And pure means the original thing when nothing's added, like pure water, water without anything else. So what's the pure us? Without any designation. It's the particle of consciousness, part of the supreme consciousness, meant to participate in the eternal reality of rasa, or the exchange of love with God and everything. That's the perfectional stage, and that's the eternal living entity. It's described earlier, it's just like the eternal nature of water. stupidity. But somehow or other, that hatred and the violence of politicians, commodities. So it's an important identity. All this war is identity. The real substance of water, the natural thing, it doesn't have to be maintained by anything on the fish. It's liquidity.
Hey, Rutty, can you hear me? Or you can send me an email that you hear me?
Let
me
hear
you.
Oh, you can hear me. Okay, good. Russia is not in many ways that technologically advanced. So you'll get these droppage of calls. And anyway, I was talking about the Nitya Dharma. So he asked, what is the behavior? And it describes, he describes, and this is the part we're at. And I think this is where we really begin to learn the philosophy. And usually, you know, how I do it, I prepare, you know, I read back and put us in context. And we missed last Wednesday because I was traveling, so it's 2 weeks ago. But somehow or other, he discusses the behavior of someone who has kind of realize that I am a servant of God and is trying to come in touch with that. But there's basically, you know, three levels of that. And it's called Kanishtha Adhikari. Kanishtha means the beginning level. And then there's Madhyama Adhikari, the middle level, and then there's Uttama Adhikari, and then there's the top level. So the beginning level is one generally just tends to see God in the people. And he hasn't yet come to the level of Uttama Bhakti. That's Uttama Bhakti means that you understand that the purpose of devotion is to please Krishna. Before that, you know, you may go to the temple and you may put rice on the altar and, you know, pray to God to get, you know, your daughter married or to your nephew to get a job or when you actually come to that point of intentionally trying to please God in your activities. That generally comes to the platform of Madhyama Adhikari. And Kanishtha, he just sees God in the temple. He doesn't see God in people's hearts. And, you know, he just worships the deity. He worships God, but he doesn't see God in others. And some acharyas have described that as a type of hypocrisy. It's almost as if you respect someone publicly. You know, you treat your wife nice in public, but when you come home, you're nasty. Vice versa. So that's a type of hypocrisy. That's a type of hypocrisy. So similarly, to worship God in the temple, but not in the hearts of people. That's conditioned. Now, Mudgem, it comes to the platform where one actually has discrimination. And according to that discrimination, that understanding, that spiritual understanding, he worships God and those who fully manifest God in their hearts, which are pure devotees. The level of reverence for someone, of course we respect everyone, but the level of reverence or worship of someone is to the degree that their consciousness is pure and they manifest God. In fact, and it did describe in previous ages, there wasn't so much of a focus on deity worship. Of course, previous ages there was more, but way, way back, as in the Satya Yuga, the golden age, the age of goodness, there wasn't such a focus of that because people were very qualified, they were non-envious, and there were other people who were very pure and advanced, and people could see God within them, and manifest within them, and therefore respect them. And so one worships those God in the form of the deity and in others, or advance, makes friends with the devotees. He is compassionate to the ignorant. And he is upeksha. He is neglectful of those who are inimical. And inimical means they don't even have, you know, the level of bhakti to see even God in the temple. You know, in this discussion, you know, the person asking the question says, how should the devotees, the pure devotees, behave towards such inimical people? So it's their duty to neglect them. Now, the wonderful thing about Jagadharma and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it really tries to make things explicitly clear. Because if you don't have clear conceptions, you won't have clear actions. You won't know what to do, and you'll make mistakes. It's very important to have a clear conception. So the word attention, neglect, does not imply that one should abandon all social dealings that are normal between human beings. And nor does it mean that one should not try to alleviate an inimical person's difficulty or if he falls into distress. It says rather, grihastha Vaishnavas, Vaishnavas who are married and have families, they remain within society. And so they'll have many types of relationships. For instance, with relatives through marriage, with others through business dealings, through the maintenance of property, for bringing up animals, to mitigate the suffering and ailments of others, and through their positions as citizens of the state. So this is actually, I think I'm not sure which of the Babaji's is explaining, but I think it's Vaishnava's Babaji. He's generally referred to because of his learning. So this is what he's explained. When you're in society, you have so many types of relationships, and some of them are going to be in it. So does it mean that you can neglect them? Well, what does it mean that you neglect those relationships? Is that these different social relations entail connection with inimical people. And avoidance does not mean that we should.
Hi, Krishna. This is Dhanadhar Swami. Can someone please say hello? The call is dropped again.
Jai Maharaj, we can hear you.
Hello? Okay. It looks like it'll take me, once the call drops, 2 minutes to get back on. So the technology is not that bad. So it says neglect means it's you don't take their association when it comes to spiritual matters in terms of their, you know, deeper conceptions of life, whatever it is. You can't become close with them on that. It says some members of one's family may acquire a malicious nature as a result of their sinful activities from a previous life. Should one abandon such people? And it says, and this is even they get malicious. He says, certainly not. One should deal with them without attachment insofar as ordinary affairs are concerned, but one should not associate with them for spiritual matters. Upeksha should be applied in this regard. Spiritual association means to meet together for the purpose of spiritual advancement, to discuss topics of eternal truth, and to render reciprocal service and welfare that awakens one's devotional sentiments. Upeksha means avoiding the association of people with whom such types of exchanges are not possible. When an inimical person who has adopted discordant or inconsistent opinions hears glorification of Shuddha Bhakti or virtuous instructions regarding bhakti, he will immediately retort with some futile argument which is not beneficial for you or for him. One should avoid such fruitless arguments and interact with such people only as far as necessary in routine social dealings. One may think that one should include inimical people among the ignorant and therefore bestow mercy on him, but if one does so, one will not help them and will only harm oneself. One should be benevolent but with caution, because if people are inimical, if you bring them into these discussions, they will be offensive. So Madhyam Adhikari, Shuddha Bhaktis, or people who are practicing pure devotional service, he concludes, should certainly follow these four instructions. If they neglect to do so in any way, they become guilty of behaving improperly and thus fail to do that for which they are qualified. This is considered a serious defect as explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the question is how should one behave? Well, this is how a Vaishnava behaves. He behaves according to the qualification of the people he is relating to. And if it's superior, he worships. That's how they behave. If it's the devotees, you make friends with them. You exchange in different levels. And if it's ignorant, and these things were discussed in detail before, because I didn't review it before, I can't off the top of my head kind of summarize it. And then if it's people that are innocent, you enlighten them. And if they're inimical, upeksha, you neglect them. And especially, you neglect them in terms of discussing philosophy and eternal truths and meeting together for elevation of consciousness. And it won't help such people if they're inimical and not innocent. And one who is a Madhyam Adhikari, a middle qualification devotee, this is how he behaves. And if you don't do that,
he says, it's a defect. And then he quotes from the Bhagavatam, Sway Sway Dikari Nishtah Saguna Parikirtita. To be firmly established in the duties one is authorized to perform is a good quality, where failure to do so is a fault. Good qualities and faults are ascertained in this way. So you're have a duty according to perform. So one who's actually becoming a devotee, then he has certain duties in relationship to his behavior. And to perform those duties is one's good qualities. And you fail to do it, then that's a fault. So I'm just going to read a little bit, and then I'm going to be finished with this section. It's like another paragraph. In other words, good qualities and faults are determined according to one's eligibility. According to your qualifications, you have certain abilities, not by any other criterion. According to the Shastras, he repeats, the Madhyam Adhikari, Shuddha Bhakta, practicing devotion, pure devotion, should develop prem for Krishna and friendship for his pure devotees. He should be merciful to the ignorant. He should neglect those who are inimical. Now, this is so interesting. The degree of friendship that a Madhyam Bhakta establishes other Bhaktas should be in keeping with the degree of their advancement in bhakti. The degree of mercy that he bestows upon the ignorant depends on their degree of sincerity or foolishness. And the extent which he neglects the inimical depends on their degree of enmity. Madhyam Bhakta considers all these things as he interacts with others in spiritual affairs. Worldly affairs should be conducted in a straightforward manner, but always should be performed with the consideration of the ultimate spiritual benefit. So you act in a very straightforward way, honest way, but with a consideration of spiritual advancement. So we have to reflect on this as we advance. And this is how our friendships develop. They develop gradually. Our friendships develop with the devotees. And our mercy is manifest with those who are innocent. And our upeksha, our neglect, as was described, is those anyway. And in terms of God, so now we'll get more to a little bit of the novel. Just then, a resident of Bharatgacha named Nityananda Das interrupted by saying, what is the behavior of an Uttama Bhakta? So he told what is a Kanishtha, what is a Madhyam. What is one who's an Uttama Bhakta, who's at the highest level of consciousness? Now, what is his behavior? Who's fully realized the self and is dwelling in the self and the love of the self and the compassion of the self. What is his who's retained the highest? Slightly startled, Babaji Maharaj said, brother, you've asked the question and I'm just in the process of answering. Let me finish what I have to say. I am an old man and my memory is fading. If the subject matter changes too abruptly, I will forget what I'm going to say. And this is so relevant. I've realized this so much, that when you're answering something and you're developing a train of thought, it's very disturbing if someone interrupts. That's why when instructing someone, it's best that one has the platform to do so. I notice some cases where someone has a doubt in Krishna consciousness, or someone asks a question and you're beginning to answer it and you're developing a train of thought, and then someone will interrupt you. And you'll lose your train of thought. He's saying that here. And this is also for us. We're very, very careful in terms of, even there's a principle, and someone just asked me this today, that one generally does not try to instruct others in the presence of someone who's more advanced. And the opposite, one doesn't, and certainly doesn't interrupt one. Babaji was strict. Although he never found fault with anyone, he was quick to respond when anyone spoke inappropriately. So we shouldn't criticize, but we have to correct if we're in the position to do so. There's a difference because it's not done out of enmity. It's done from the platform of service. Everyone was stunned to hear his words. Again, Babaji offered pranam, his obeisance to Nityananda Prabhu at the foot of the banyan tree, and resumed speaking. Babaji, when the bhakta of Madhyam progresses beyond the stages of sadhana, practice, and bhava, and devotional ecstasy, and comes to the level of praying, its full perfection becomes highly condensed. And at that time, the Vaishnava becomes an Uttama Adhikari. So that's brilliant. So there's three stages, there's three levels of devotion, varieties of devotion. You can have to execute devotion at the level of sadhana. It's the practice to achieve perfection. And you can execute it at the level of bhava, which is devotional ecstasy, but it's not the perfectional state because it's not yet fully dense. Prema is love of God that's so dense that it's like the difference between the sun rays and the sun. The sun is heat and light. It's so condensed. And the sun rays are also powerful, but there's some laxity in it. So there's a difference between bhava and prema in that way. Bhava is prema ankur. It's the sprout of prema. And the sprout of prema. Prema is the full flower. And therefore, and the only difference between bhava and prema, this is interesting, is the lingering effects of Vaishnava aparadha, of offending devotees. There's still lingering effects. That's what differentiates bhava. And bhava is a very high state. In fact, sadhana, the practice of sadhana, the practice of devotion, is done with the intention of getting bhava. Because bhava is a very, very high platform also. And at bhava, your yearning for God attracts his mercy in the form of his internal bliss potency, which descends on your consciousness. So it's not, but anyway, but when you come to prema, and then at the level of prema, he quotes a verse from 11th canto, 2nd chapter, 45th verse, Sarvabhute Shriyapasye Bhagavad Bhavan Atmana Bhutani Bhagavat Yatman Yesha Bhagavatotama. One who sees his own Bhagavad Bhavan, the ecstatic mood of attraction to Krishna in the hearts of all living entities, and sees all beings within Bhagavan, God, is an Uttama Bhagavan. So there comes a level of devotion when one is so overwhelmed with love that one sees that love in others. So there's not, and actually it's said to teach, even the highest devotee has to come down to the platform of Madhyam. He has to make discrimination. He has to say, this person is ignorant, and I need to instruct him. this person is a devotee, I make friendship. But the Uttama Bhagavat, Vaishnav, he's seeing through the heart. So even someone like Prabhupada, he would see through the heart. He would see that, you know, my disciples, they're pure devotees. My disciples, they're sent by my Guru Maharaj to deliver me. But even any ordinary person, they have an option to a certain extent to see through the heart or see through the intelligence. Otherwise, how can the guru instruct? He has to come down to the Madhyam platform. He can't just dwell and see through the eyes of his bhava. Because if he sees through the eyes of his bhava, he will see his love in every living entity. And therefore, he won't be able to teach. And Uttama Bhagavat perceives that all living beings love Sri Hari with the same particular feeling of transcendental love that he himself cherishes towards his Ishtadev. He also perceives Sri Hari feels a reciprocal attraction of love towards all living beings. And Uttama Vaishnava has no disposition other than this mood of transcendental love. Other moods arise from time to time according to different circumstances, but they're all transformations of that tema. Example, Subhadeva Goswami was in Uttama Bhagavat, but he described Kamsa in words such as Bhoja Pamsula, a disgrace of both dynasty. Although it appears as if these words were spoken of enmity towards Kamsa, they're also actually a manifestation of prema or love towards Krishna. When Shuddha Prema becomes the very life of a bhakta, he is known as an Uttama Bhagavat. In this condition, there is no longer any distinction between love, friendship, mercy, as in the case of the Madhyam Adhikari. All his behavior becomes a manifestation of prema, and there's no difference in his eyes between a Kanishka, Madhyam, or Uttama Vaishnav. Nor is there any difference between a Vaishnav and a non-Vaishnav. This advanced condition is really rare. Just consider now that Kanishka Vaishnav does not render service to the Vaishnavs, and an Uttama Vaishnav does not make any distinction between Vaishnavas and non-Vaishnavas. Three sees all Jivas as servants of Krishna. So look at the difference between a Kanishka, who doesn't see God in anyone, and an Uttama, who sees God in everyone. This means that only Madhyam Vaishnavas offer respect to Vaishnavas and render service to them. A Madhyam Vaishnav must serve the three kinds of Vaishnavas: those who chant Krishna's name even once, those who chant Krishna's name constantly, and those whose mere sight automatically causes Krishna Nam to dance in one's tongue. A Vaishnav may be considered a Vaishnav, a superior Vaishnav, or a superlative Vaishnav according to his degree of advancement. A Madhyam Bhakta should serve Vaishnavas according to their status. Only an Uttama Vaishnava would conclude that it's improper to consider whether a Vaishnava is Kanishna, Madhyam, or Uttam. If a Madhyam Adhikari thinks in this way, he will become an offender. Sriman Mahaprabhu indicated this to the residents of Kuligram, and his instructions are to be revered even more than the Vedas by all Madhyam Vaishnavas. And what are the Vedas or Shruti? They're the orders of Bhagavan. Having said this much, Haridas Babaji became silent for a moment. At this time, Nityananda Das Babaji folded his hands and said very gently, "I ask a question now." Haridas Babaji replied. Now, Haridas Babaji is over 100 years old. "Babaji Maharaj, to which category of Vaishnav do you think I belong? Am I a Kanishka or a Madhyam? I'm certainly not an Uttama. Anyway, this is going to get really interesting, and we'll continue it next Wednesday. Is there anyone who would like to say hello to relieve my anxiety? If people have actually been hearing me. I hear someone.
Jai Maharaj, Rati Krishna.
Okay, Rati, thank you. Good. Rati, we can hear my class?
I thought you were pretty clear for the most part, like except for when just before you cut off, sometimes you get a little bit garbled, but it wasn't
okay,
that often.
Anyway, we made great effort today. Would you like to say hello? I know, Rati, when this happens, then people get frustrated and they tell me I would try to mute, I tried to unmute.
Yeah.
No, I couldn't get through. So I do know there are other people there.